Welcome to the Mental Health
Week. It's time for you to start your radio show.
Inch by inch, row by row, Andy Lopez makes your garden grow. All it takes is organic know-how to make some fertile ground. Inch by inch, box by box, Andy Lopez makes your garden rock. With Invisible Gardener Radio Talk and a panic, it's organic.
Me and the boys come to Earth to do some fishing. While here, we listen to BBSRadio.com. Don't panic, it's organic. Every Saturday afternoon from 1 to 2 p.m. Pacific. Hello and welcome to the time. Listen to Don't Panic, It's Organic on BBSRadio.com.
How do you like that? I hit the wrong button and it went Pacific. Wow. I discovered a new button. Anyway, a breeze through it. This is Andy Lopez, better known as the Invisible Gardener. We have all kinds of things going on today, as usual. First, I want to talk a little bit about something that I'm sure you'll find interesting. I also have a question that someone has sent to me from one of my listeners and readers. They read my column and listen to the radio show. Excuse me. So a few months ago, maybe sometime last year, I had on as a guest a lady named Carrie Gilliam. She wrote the book Whitewash, the story of a weed killer, cancer, and the corruption of science. Well, guess what? So there's the Guardian, written in the Guardian, that there has been a calculated strategy to take down journalist Carrie Gilliam can be seen as a step to dismantle organic. So basically, it talks about the fact that it's not just Carrie that they're going after. They're going after the whole organic system that's already in place. And what they're doing is carefully crafted campaign by Monsanto to discredit her. According to The Guardian, Monsanto's actions included the following: keeping a Carrie Gilliam book spreadsheet with more than 20 actions dedicated to opposing her book before its publication, including working to engage pro-science third parties in criticism, paying Google to promote such search results for Monsanto glyphosate Carrie Gilliam, and criticized her work, labeling Gilliam and other critics as anti-glyphosate activists and pro-organic capitalist organizations. They monitored U.S. Rights to Know, a food research organization where Gilliam currently works through his Intelligent Fusion Center. So they monitored this organization. They turned that the FBI and other law enforcement agencies used for operations focused on surveillance and terrorism. So by discrediting Carrie Gilliam in the court of public opinion, it has the effect of confusing consumers from the actual harm of glyphosate, a chemical that has the World Health Organization has said is a possible human carcinogen and is known to the state of California to cause cancer. Monsanto spoke many times in his documents about the fact that people wouldn't trust messaging that comes from the company directly. So they worked to fool the consumer by pushing their propaganda out through individuals and groups that look like they are independent of the company. But this strategy extends far beyond placing seeds of doubt in minds of consumers. Based on internal Monsanto documents uncovered by the U.S. Right to Know and policy, a domestic policy advisor at the White House said, "We have Monsanto's back on pesticide regulation." On August 8th, this promise was kept. The Trump administration EPA told companies not to warn customers about products that contain glyphosate, which would counter a California regulation that requires labels to warn consumers that the Roundup ingredient is potentially cancer-causing. Pesticide critics and organized organic food advocates are the same enemy. So one could easily assume that those entities who are attempting to take down the critics of glyphosate, I have a hard time with that, glyphosate, are also trying to dismantle the organic food industry. At a recent House Agricultural Subcommittee, Gary Ibeck, the USDA's Undersecretary for Marketing and Regulation Program, said his agency was open to having the discussion of allowing genetic editing in organic. So that is very bad. That being said, if the U.S. truly wants to go down this path, it will need to get the approval of the National Organic Standards Board. And here's the most important part that I think about this whole article, is that National Organic Standards Board is a 15-member advisory panel that makes recommendations to the USDA about organic rules, ingredients, and processes. OSB members are on a staggered 5-year terms, and each one is appointed by the board to the board by the Secretary of the USDA. Now, this administration has already approved 2 members to this board, and if President Trump wins in 2020, his USDA will have named all 15 of the NOSB members by 2023. Get it? So that would not be very good, because all these are appointed by the same people who are then going to turn around and say it's all safe to use. So we had that's the main thing that I wanted to get across here, that we have to keep an eye on this and see and be alert to what's going on, because it's not good. So So another thing that's interesting too that I was reading is that General Mills is going to be reducing its synthetic pesticide use, and that farmers who are working with the company say that farmers who are part of the company General Mills wants to reduce its pesticide use, and that farmers who are working with the company say that farmers who are part of the company's sustainability program are not allowed to use pre-harvest glyphosate, right? So it's a very big deal that General Mills is starting to pay attention to that. So if you have information that you like me to relay, I'm happy to do that. Another friend sent me this information saying that Turkey and Ukraine are not the only countries suspected of selling companies fraudulent organic grains. It turns out that the many companies around the world falsely labeling their products as organic, whether it be grains, fruits, vegetables, and shipping it to us at a higher cost. Many times when they leave the port as a conventional product, they end up in the United States as a certified organic product. See what I'm saying, right? Okay, that's enough for the news for today. You can send the news to me at Andy Lopez at InvisibleGardener.com. Send the news to me. Yeah, right, at Andy Lopez at InvisibleGardener.com. Put news for the radio show. I'm happy to announce it. I'm also will send anybody who send me something an email back saying you have won the contest and you get a free lifetime member in my club. I run a club called Club IG. It's like Club Invisible Gardener. And I've been doing this since 1970. So basically what this show is really about is like a class, okay? So I go over a little bit of everything that I know of and slowly pass it on to you and answer your questions. So whenever I get a question, oh yeah, by the way, I want to talk a little bit about the fire in the Amazon, okay? Which is not really good news, because the Amazon provides 25% of the world's oxygen. So let me get this straight. We're already burning down. It looks like it was down on purpose so that they can then plant more other things that they want to, not necessarily plant, but they want to use the area for other types of non-tree productive. You know, you're not going to be growing anything. It could be anything from palm oil. Could be whatever it is that they're doing over there. The point is that we should not be cutting down any trees whatsoever, especially on the Amazon, because we have a problem now with oxygen, right? We have more carbon dioxide going on in the air, and that's not just the biggest problem. The problem is the methane. Methane is being spewed out by the earth more and more now, and looks like it's going to be less and less oxygen. Not a good formula. Just wanted to say that, okay? So, and interesting too, when I was just thinking about when they do the fire to the Amazon, they're also damaging the soil, because the soil gets burnt up. It comes back to a certain extent, but the trees take a long time to take in the earth carbon dioxide and give off the oxygen to get to that point where it makes a difference. And so we have to, you know, something has to be done in terms of helping those folks to survive, to realize that their trees are the most valuable and that we should be paying them not to cut it down. I think people around the world should be sending them, make a deal with them, we'll send you this money if you don't cut your trees down. Just saying. Okay? All right. So today I'm going to be talking about how minerals are used by plants and animals. You have a good idea how minerals are used by humans, in the sense that you eat it, you know, and it's supposed to go into your body, and then it's supposed to provide you with the nutrients that you need, right? So you know that. You know how that works to some degree, right? But what's interesting is that, see, because we basically are eating the minerals that other plants have eaten, that other animals have eaten, right? We don't eat the minerals directly. You cannot eat calcium, iron, magnesium, all those things directly into your body. It's not going to work. Okay? So it's like we know about the chain, right? So everything comes from the soil. The food and everything comes through this process that allows us to eventually enter it in our body in a form that we can use. I talked a little bit last time about, because I do one of my radio shows, it's called Cosmic Gardening. And I talk about what it is that we're really, I'm moving in closer, what it is that we really are want from the trace minerals. And I talked about how basically what it really is that again, if you heard it last week, I'm sorry for repeating myself. If you haven't heard it yet, then that's good, right? I do tend to repeat myself a little bit over time, because I'm not sure what you've all heard, or who. So I just tried to spit it out. But basically, I call it cosmic gardening because we live in a world of cosmic energy surrounding us with our Earth. Our solar system, all the planets, even the galaxies, are swirling in this cosmic energy. The galaxies, the planets, the suns are giving off all these types of electromagnetic waves, cosmic rays. When things blow up, they give off these rays. They go through they travel for trillions and trillions of miles in a nanosecond. Cosmic rays shoot through the Earth in one nanosecond, which is like billions of a second. In one billionth of a second, a cosmic ray will shoot from one part of the Earth to another part and come out the other side in one nanosecond and keep on going. But what's interesting, and there are different types of cosmic rays. The types of cosmic rays are also dependent upon where in the space we are. As you know, we are on a train, basically moving through space. Our planet is revolving around the sun, but the sun is revolving around another part of the solar system. Is revolving around our solar system. Our solar system is revolving around another galaxy. That galaxy is revolving around another galaxy and another part of the universe. And all of it's moving through space, moving through time and space. That's where we come up with the signs, the zodiac signs. We understood that we are moving through space. So when you have the Aquarian Age, the Piscean Age, these are cycles that happen. And basically, in my opinion, there are cycles of our progression through the space. What it implies to me is that the space, we're not going in one direction. It's not like we keep going in this direction, because otherwise we wouldn't be coming over the same space again. My understanding of this is that we're going in like a circle. We come back up on the space again, then we go traveling, in other words, we go through all the different spaces over and over again through time. That's how we get the different ages. So right now we're going from the Piscean Age into the Aquarian Age, which is basically saying we're going from this space, this area in space, into this area in space. Each area in space has its own different laws of nature. Each has its own different rules that is followed by each has a different frequency, different the matter, the nature of energy is different, can be completely different as being a Pisces, a fish swimming in water, and all of a sudden a Pisces, you're swimming in the air or flying in the air. So it's very different. And so that's how you come up with all these different ages. And right now we're overlapping the two. We're going from the Piscean age to the Aquarian age. It's a time of change. The beings that are living in the Piscean age have to learn how to be creatures of flying in the air instead of fishes in the ocean. And but what we get out of it is that these cosmic rays are different in the Piscean age and in the Aquarian age, because we're going through different spaces, right? Through different, so they bring different energy with them. Their frequencies are different. The matter that they bring and the energy that they bring are different. So the cosmic rays are not the same, okay? And so the food is not the same in essence. You know, the things that what we're getting into our body is different, okay? So that's the basic reason why we eat the minerals. We think that we're eating, you know, eating to live, have our bodies and to grow and have teeth and all that stuff. Yeah, you need all that stuff. So that's all part of it. But the rays, the energy that it gives off is what causes it to become alive. It's what causes it to have a consciousness. It's the energy that we really thrive on, which is building this house, right, that we can use, a vehicle that we can use. I don't want to get too metaphysical, so this is supposed to be a gardening thing. Okay, so, but basically the way this physical plane works that we are now, is we're supposed to eat the minerals that plants have ever eaten, whether we eat animals, birds, whatever, however we get to it, it's up to you guys. But basically the plants are the first group of folks that eat the minerals that come from the soil, that come from the mycelium. It's not meant for the plants to be getting minerals from anywhere else. The only, for example, you know, plants can get nitrogen from the air. They do not get minerals from the air, even though they can be certain types of minerals that are taken up in water, but again, that's not the air. So water vapor can go up into the air and transfer to certain types of minerals to the plants, right? And again, it depends what you think about what you want to call a carbon dioxide is a mineral, right? Methane is a mineral. Even though these are gases, they're a form of minerals. So minerals in different forms, okay? But what we want is we want to be able to have the way the system is set up for us is for us to eat something that has these minerals in it in a form that we can then absorb and use. And so there's a very similar process that happens between plants and animals and humans in their eating process. And as I explained before, they're very similar in the sense that one evolved from the other. We have evolved over the millions of years to have a system of microbiology that goes with us as opposed to microbes that live in the soil. We decided we can get up, separate ourselves from the soil and move about. That's what our stomach is. Basically, it's a movable soil, like a little movable earth that we take with us, right? But there's two. The two are very still connected in lots of different ways. And interestingly enough, is that not only are they connected in how, you know, we have evolved from the soil. But we also connect it in non-physical form. We can feel the energies that the soil talks to us, because the soil, our soil inside of us, can talk to the soil in the earth. And it does that through many, many different methods. It's not like our stomach is the one that's talking to each other. But if you understand anything about the body, you understand that the stomach is actually the mind of the body. Many people will like to call the mind, you know, that's the main important tool, but it's the stomach that governs the mind, that governs it, the brain, I mean, not the mind, the brain, excuse me, the brain. The mind is just, it's something else I can talk about. But the brain is another tool, and the real The real boss is the stomach, and not the stomach per se, just the city that the stomach holds together. This city inside of us. It's more like a universe inside of us, because there are more microbes in our stomach than there are anywhere in our and the solar system, maybe even in this universe. It's just like there are more grains of sand in the beach than there are stars in the sky, that kind of stuff. And I learned that in order to the parallel between healthy people, healthy animal, healthy birds, you know, healthy insects, healthy trees, right? Healthy fruit trees. They all are in the same parallel path in terms of health, in terms of what it takes for them to be happy and healthy, and in terms of what happens when they're not, how diseases and pests play a role in this. So everything has intertwined. Everything has evolved in this intertwined way, right? That affects the other. One affects the other. Because when I looked at things, so I've always been on pretty much of a health fad eating. You know, I try not to eat. I really was a fruit. I was a breatharian for a while when I lived in Costa Rica. I decided to become a breatharian. Lived on a what's it called? The top of a mountaintop that's been cut. You know, it's just the top that's been cut. It's an atoll. Not an atoll. Atoll is like a little beach ocean spot. So it's a top of a mountain that's been cut off. It's a flat spot, very high. So I stayed there and I breathed, but I ended up eating. I didn't do too long of breatharian, but I love being a fruitarian. But the problem with being a fruitarian, I found that it really destroyed my teeth. Right? It's just the acids just really went through my teeth, so I became a vegetarian. I was never much into meat. You know, I definitely don't like killing things to eat them. So et cetera, et cetera. Now I don't do dairy. I don't do. I went to Indian food the other day, and I said, "Any dairy here? No dairy. Only butter." I go, oh, yes. I don't do butter. I don't do cheese. My stomach can't handle any of those things anymore. I don't do bread. I don't like sugar. I'm addicted to sugar. There's a product that I buy, and if it doesn't say organic certified sugar sources, I'm not going to buy it. Natural is no good. The label of natural has been corrupted now, because you can have that high fructose sugar in there, which is not, it may be natural that it comes from plants, but it's not natural to be that kind of high fructose. That's why it's called high fructose. It's been genetically modified to be super duper if you eat this sugar. Okay, so anyway, the whole key to this whole, growing organically, right, is the soil. That's the whole key to it. And it doesn't make any difference if you're doing a vegetable garden, if you're doing fruit trees, right, or if you're doing landscaping, if you're doing, tree care, nursery. Personally, I would love to do a nursery. An organic nursery, I would go nuts with it, right? I tell people, bring me your sick and your weak. Put it there. Take something else with you. That's what I did in Florida. I had like a hospital for plant hospital. And what I do now for my customers is, this is what I started doing a long time ago, is basically paying attention to the health of the soil. In the beginning when I started, I didn't have it together so much to talk to people as to why I felt I was doing something like this. They just understood that I was doing it organically. I wasn't using any chemicals, and that I was just using, if anything, I'll do organic fertilizers and organic control methods. My organic fertilization has always been very light because I started early on in life believing about feed the soil and you feed the plants. I always believed that right off from the bat. So I started feeding the soil when I made compost. See, theoretically, the only thing you should fertilize your plants with should be compost. So everything should go into the compost, and then therefore everything, the plants will get everything they need. So the process of making compost is a very important process. I tell people, do you know the real reason why you're making compost? A lot of people, 9 out of 10 people say, well, we're recycling, right? We're taking kitchen waste, putting in there grass clippings, recycling everything. It's really great for recycling. Okay, that's not the real reason. Okay, so that's not my real reason. Okay, it happens to be a good benefit. It happens to be one of the benefits of making compost, right? That's one of the benefits. But what is the real reason one makes compost? One makes compost to heal the soil, right? To help heal the soil. Because what's happening is we realize that humankind, is not only damaging the soil constantly, but it's doing nothing to help it recover. Right? You can't keep that up for long without having serious problems all across the board, whether it be plants, whether it be insects, whether it be birds, whether it be animals, whether it be humans. Everything is depending upon this chain. It goes right back to the health of the soil. You know, I would venture to say that there are civilizations in other planets who did not pay attention to that. Their soil died. Nothing will grow. They eventually, as a civilization, either had to move on to another planet or they died. You can't live in a sterile environment. That's just an opinion. Right? Let's see what happens if I push this button. Wow. This is a song I'm working on. I do multitasking. So I'm working on this song at the same time I'm doing my radio show. I know. So it goes. So I figured out that in order, when I started doing my gardening for people, they call me when there's a problem. It's just like, I have a friend who's a dentist. Yeah, believe it or not, he's a dentist. And he says, people call me when there's a problem. Very rarely do I have people come in. Everything's fine. Do a little teeth cleaning. Do a regular maintenance on them. They always call me when there's something going on with their teeth. And by that time, it's almost too late to tell them, well, you got a big hole in the side of your teeth. Maybe you should quit eating this, or maybe you should brush more often, or whatever, right? And it's the same thing that happens with me. When people call me, they already have a big problem with their tree, or with their lawn, or with their roses, or with their property. So it's like calling somebody saying, my son's a junkie, a drug addict, right? So it's not an easy, simple task to help recover, because you have to, you know, in order to, I tell people, in order to help you understand a fireplace, and to understand that you burn your hand, if you burn your hand in the fire, you will burn your hand every time you stick your hand in the fireplace. Maybe it might be a good idea to quit sticking your hand into the fireplace in order for you to heal your hand up. That's a simple way of putting it. But in order to heal the soil, right, you have to stop using fire. You have to stop doing the things that damage it, right? And usually that's some type of toxin, right? We're very good at spreading toxins around, creating toxins and spreading them around. You know, so you name the thing that there's toxins in water, in my opinion, because these are chemicals that are not normally found in nature. There's toxins in all types of chemicals, herbicides, pesticides, fungicides. Chemical fertilizers are toxic to the soil, believe it or not. Chemical fertilizers are toxic to the soil. Now, they don't kill the soil exactly. The term soil is just a way of saying the condominium that all these people are living in. And once the microbes, the living organisms that live in those, each one of those condominiums are the ones I'm talking about. So a chemical fertilizer destroys the little folks that are living in there. And the ones that come back are different folks that don't do what job that we want to. I tell people they're good guys and bad guys. They're not really bad guys, but this is just to help you understand, you know, a little bit easier about it. And the good guys are the ones that do what we want, what we like, you know, what we want. That would be take the trace minerals and then turn them into a solution that then is delivered to the plants via the root hairs, right? What we don't want are the bad guys who are basically promote diseases. They're one type of disease or another, right? Right? Say yes. See? So, anyway, here's a question, because I didn't want to go too far before. When people send me a question, I always want to do that first, because that's one of my favorite things to do. Remember, you can always call me and talk to me, especially while I'm on the air. You know, we do Skype, so Skype is BBS Radio PR. You can always call the toll-free line, 888-627-6008. And you can always call, use the direct line, that's 323-744-4831. When you call, make sure you give him your email address, because he doesn't know it, but he's going to send me the email address to me, and I'll include you in the contest. Anyway, here's a question sent in by May, M-A-E. I enjoy your radio show and your articles. You are a wealth of knowledge in organic gardening. I like this person already. It is the first thing I turn to when I get your newsletter. I listen to your show every morning, every Saturday. Regarding your latest show on bricks, you suggested purchasing a refractometer. I looked it up, and this instrument ranges from $17 to over $100. Actually, it's a lot more than $100. Over $100 is the easy way to put it. My question to you is, which is a reasonable cost, one that will test whether my citrus fruits and vegetables that I may be growing is at the adequate level? And she sent me a link to another one. I'm looking at this model on Amazon. What is your opinion? I have, May, so I have four refractometers. I have one that's $17. I have one that's $35. I have one that's $100 and one that's $300. Wait a second. No, wait. So I got four. Okay, so I have four refractometers. It's $10,000 and it's definitely 1990, 2000, I think it had before 2000, before 1990, somewhere maybe 1990, something like that, maybe a little earlier, maybe in the late 80s. It was given to me by the Leica company. They may also make the refractometer. At that time, it was worth a lot more, and I'm pretty sure you can buy them now for any number, any range. I have another one that's $300, which is a digital one. It's a little bit harder to deal with because it is digital. You have to put batteries in it. It's a lot more fragile. It can't really do it in the sun. It doesn't handle getting wet, you know. And then I have another one that's $300. Another one that's $100. And another one is $35. Interesting enough, they all give the same reading. I would take the fruit of a juice, put it on all three of them, take out the reading, they're identical. So I'm going, hey. So it doesn't really matter. What you want to do is make sure that it has the right range. Usually they'll tell you, you know, if you want to check it for wine, you want to check it for citrus, you want to check it for your fruit and vegetables. If you can't figure out what to do, you get it for beer. It'll say for beer making, because the $35 one is a beer. It was for beer making. Works perfectly. So use the one that says for beer if you can't figure out which other ones to do. I like getting one that's temperature stabilized. That means that if you go out, you're outside and it gets hot, you're still going to get the same reading than if you go outside and it's cold. Except it doesn't really work that way. In that sense, also too, because It just means that it doesn't affect it by the refractometer, is not affected by the, it'll give you accurate reading, but you will get a different Brix level in a cold environment than you would in a hot environment, simply because in a hot environment, the plant's functioning at its top, performance level. It's pumping the fruit through there. It's the sun is shining, lots of energy. The Brix level is going to be higher than it is during the colder environment. Everything's slowing down. The wintertime, the Brix levels are very, very low, like hibernating low. Okay, so that's, thank you, mate, for the question. Remember, you can send it to andylopez@invisiblegardener.com. One of the things I would love it if you mentioned to me is where in the world you're at, because I don't know where you're at, right? What city or what state or what country, or I suppose you can mention planet. you don't have to mention planet, but what country or what state or what city would be great, okay? All right, so then, let's see. So, I wanted to talk a little bit about, people have been asking me about two things, I was talking about how trees communicate, and it, to me, it's always been an obvious answer to that, even though there are several different ways that a tree can communicate, just like, you know, several different ways humans and insects communicate. They all have several different methods, you know. Even though we have a vocal, we do vocalism, you know, when we're talking, we also have hand language, sign language movements. We can communicate in various different ways. So trees, you would think that they could wave at each other, right? Remember, trees don't have eyes. They have senses in a different form, but not eyes. But they can sense different types of energy signals from fragrances. You know when a tree is blooming, they have different smells, and those are different types of signals that the trees can use to communicate with each other. But the main way that trees communicate with each other is through their roots, and their roots basically tap into the mycelium network. It's called a network for a reason, because it is an information highway. I call it an internet of the soil. It is a method for one tree to communicate with another tree, whether it's in trouble, whether there's danger, whether there's a fire coming, whether it's an insect or a disease, or whether it needs minerals, it needs food. Scientists have discovered that other trees will feed a tree that is weak or something happened to it and help it recover. And there are lots of ways that they have figured that, but that is also true. So they communicate through their root systems, through the mycelium network. The mycelium functions in many different ways. So if it not only does it provide food, minerals to plants, but also provides a form of communication. And the communication goes beyond just trees talking to each other. It turns out that everybody's talking to each other. When a tree is communicating to other trees, say, I'm in trouble, I need help. You don't think that an insect by now would have evolved to have figured out how to hear that too? Oh, good, that tree is in trouble. I'm going to go over there and do my thing, because that's the way it works. And it's the same thing on all the different levels, see? So whenever somebody's in trouble, not only the good guys hear it, but the bad guys hear it too, see? So it's a very interesting process. That has evolved over the years, and so when I do a property, I tend to acknowledge this energy transaction that goes on there. I believe that, for example, there is when I go to a place, even when I go visit my customer's place. Now I look, I always acknowledge the most powerful tree there. I consider that the king and queen of the place, right? And they guide, they're their energies of the whole property. The whole property is intertwined with this being, these beings. They communicate throughout all these different trees. And so I have learned to listen to those and understand what it is that's happening to them. Because I found out from experience that since I'm not living there, people tend to do the weirdest things to their property, to their soil. From the addition of chemicals in the water, in the city water, right? Which is constantly destroying, to the addition of whatever chemicals, even though they're maybe organic, their garage is full of chemicals from gasoline, kerosene, paint, cleaner, you name it, and these are toxic, right? They're toxic to the soil. And so we have a way of very easily polluting the soil. And so I'm constantly working on trying to clean that up because they can't stop them from doing this, even though you tell them, could you please not do that anymore? They keep doing it. And they wash their car down, the soap that they're using. It should be more natural. You would think that they hire a person to do organic trees, help their trees, that they would realize that the water they're using is toxic. A lot of people nowadays, what they're doing is they're being smart. We're going to use gray water, right? So we're going to use the water that we wash the dishes with, or the water that we take a shower with, or the water that we do our laundry with. But they didn't, and they're still using the same chemical stuff, even though there are those that say, okay, this is going to be going in the ground, so we're going to try to do environmentally clean soaps. There are no such thing as really good environmentally clean soaps because they all tend to destroy the soil one level or another. They change the basic structure of the soil so that the microbes that are there cannot survive in there. They have to be filtered out in such a way, and there is a way to do it, but they don't, so what they do is they drain it out into an area, right, and let the area soak it in, right? But the way you do it is you're supposed to drain it into an area that's basically a pond. The water drains into there, and then the plants take it and absorb it, the nutrients and everything that come from the river. Filter it up from the gray water, filters it out, and what passes through and what comes out through the system, which is the system that's used to irrigate your property, that's clean water. That's a big difference, right? Okay. So let's see. So and that's what happens with the other question that people ask me a lot is about water, how water damages the soil. And to me, it's obvious is that, these microbes don't swim in the water, right? They're not very good swimmers. So that's what happens with waterlogged. The number one problem, besides chemical fertilizers, is water. Overwatering is a major problem on all these people's properties because they tend to water a lot. I was just at a place on Thursday. They got a new gardener, and then the first thing I said, okay, we have to go over the water with you again. People, the gardeners that were there were constantly watering. They said, it's hot, hot, hot. We have to water more and more and more. And I was trying to get it across to them and the owners that, everything, at one level they complained, it's hot, we have to water more. At another level they said, why does this tree have this bug? Why does it have this bug here? Why do we have ants? Why do we have, mealybugs? Why do we have white flies? Why? And I kept saying, if you stop with the watering, overwatering, you're not going to have this problem. If you continue to overwater, I was telling the lady just Thursday, I said, if your ants are wearing shorts and glasses, you're overwatering. See what I'm saying? I could do the same thing with the earthworms. They're wearing shorts and glasses, you're overwatering. And that's what they're doing. They're overwatering. The soil kills the microbes in the soil. Microbes in the soil are not doing their own thing. The ants and all these creatures go nuts because this is time to harvest these plants. These plants, whether it be the phyllodes, the ficuses, or whether it be, the whatever other types of plants they have there, mycoporums, hibiscus, whatever. If they're not getting the food they need, they will attract the pests. And usually the ants are involved in everything. So the ants will bring whatever herd, these aphids or mealybugs, even whiteflies. And one thing all these insects pests have in common is that they need water to survive. It's the same thing with diseases. They need water. The water is evaporated in the air. The disease is needed. There's one of the ladies I was talking to the other day. She has these ficus Ficus Benjaminas, that Sooty mode on him. And she was saying, you know, what are you going to do about this? What are you going to do about this? And this has been going on for about 5 years now. This is actually, I've been there 7 to 8 years now. They have a drip line underneath them, and they water them twice a week, sometimes three times a week. These ficus do better if they're watered once a week, if that. Twice a month, it's even better. So what's happening was is that the soil was dying because if it's not alive, it's not going to hold water. So they watered and would drain right through. The next day, it'd be totally dry, hot, and they water it again. So there's not a single earthworm on the place. So what I had him start doing was he bought Dr. Earth a soil planting mix, which is a nice acid mix, which has all the microbes in it, and it's a really nice organic planting mix. Plus, I blended a variety of Dr. Earth's organic fertilizers with some gypsum, a couple of different sources of rock dust. I use azomite. I use glacial rock dust. I use, you know, a couple of other different agrimin, about five or six different types of rock dust, soft rock phosphate, and I also used a ton of different sources of the microbes that I talked to you about recently, some of those, and I'll be going over more of the microbes that you can buy. Blended it all together and placed, you know, put it of course, the Dr. Earth's planting mix, mixed it together. I also bought some biochar, which is basically a carbon source, mixed it together, turned it over into the soil underneath the ficuses, watered it down very nice. We have a filter on our water system, on the hose, so I wasn't watering it down by itself, just water. I was using super seaweed, blend a liquid I already made, that's what I do with the sprayer. I spray people's property, but I also soak the soil, getting the microorganisms in there. They're in the water, and with the help of the rock dust and everything else, it will help to slowly but surely bring the soil back to life. It's been a few months now in this process of getting that to slowly start to recover. The plant itself is already looking much, much nicer. But still, the problem is there, is that they overwater. And so I have to talk to the gardener, meet with him, and basically tell him, you're not doing any of the stuff you think you're going to do. No fertilizers, you're not going to put fertilizers, you're not going to use any pesticide, no pest control whatsoever. I'll tell you what to do, and I'll help you with it. And you're going to have to work with me on the water. You know, because it's supposed to be an organic company. You guys are organic, great. And you'll do what I tell you to do because the owner says so. And if you can't do it, then you're going to have to find somebody else. And that's always been the biggest problem. It's okay. So you have to, you know, you have to give them just enough water, but not so much that you're drowning them. Not so much that you're destroying the soil. So we have to work together, get them off the water, not just the gardeners, the plants off the water, but the gardeners have to be taken off this water kick. I want to tell them, okay, so you have to start applying compost and mulch on a regular basis. I'll take care of the rock dust. I'll take care of the microbial feeding once you apply compost and mulch. And this is the compost, and this is the mulch I want to use. Lots of compost on the market now are not useful at all as any type of compost whatsoever. They're only being called that by name. They're not any good. There's only a few of them that are live. The Dr. Earth brand happens to be one of them. Very, very nice. And then the mulch, you want it to be an acid mulch, slightly acid. So I get azalea gardenia mix, or I get the Dr. Earth acid mulch for it. See, because it too is a very nice mix. So I tell people use rock dust, compost, and mulch, but the rock dust, it should be a blend of the rock dust and microbes. Different types of rock dust, you want to get a white source of rock dust, that way you get a white source of minerals, right? So one of the easiest places to get rock dust is to become a member of the Remineralize the Earth. It's remineralize.org. Remineralize.org. You can join their organization. They'll give you sources all around the world and lots of places in the United States where you can get rock dust from. It's right there on their website. Remineralize.org. I have to try. I'm trying to get Joanna on here, but she's been really behind on my guest because I'm having issues at home that I have to deal with in terms of family health and stuff like that. So I'm keeping myself really busy. Okay, so let's see. So next week, I'm going to be covering three of my sources that I use, three of the products that I use. I'm going to tell you about Organic Magic. I'm going to tell you all about Willard Water. Willard Water is developed by a doctor. His name is Dr. Willard. And it's actually for people. It's a colorless water. But because of the colorless water, it makes the minerals available. So that's one reason why it's good for people. It makes the minerals available. It turns it into a form that our body can handle the minerals. And once we get into our body, that's what our body needs. And it helps a lot of sickness and different problems. It's called Willard Water, but it also happens to work excellently for plants. So I put that in it, and then I get C90. It's called C90, SEA90. You can look it up, C90. And that's another source of trace minerals. It comes from ancient sea salt that has over 90 trace minerals. And so these are some of the products that I use, and I'll go over them with you next week as to what they are. I did talk about... I didn't mention today that I was going to tell you, I don't know if I did it or not, but Nitron 835 is one of the enzyme products that I use. It's called Nitron-835. It's an enzyme product I started using way back in the 1970s. Then I also use another product called AgriGrow, A-G-R-I-G-R-O, AgriGrow. And they have a product called Ultra and AgriGrow. AgriGrow, the original, is a pink variety. I call it pink because it is pink when you use it. And then Ultra basically has seaweed added to it. Both of these are enzyme products that have a special type of enzyme that we want. And remember, the enzymes are what we use, breaks down the trace minerals, right? The enzyme is what we use to break down the trace minerals. So that's why these products are good in that they... when they are combined. So if you combine the Nitron 835 and the AgriGrow and the Willard Water together, with your Organic Magic and the C90, just that alone right there, you're going to get a wide trace, a wide source of trace minerals. But I also add rock dust to my liquid blend. I get the rock dust added to this microbial mix here. I call it microbial soup, then breaks it all down, then I filter it out for my super seaweed. Super Seaweed is an invention of mine. You can get it from my website, invisiblegardener.com. Super Seaweed. Sometimes I have it on sale. Right now, if you enter the contest, you go to my website, click on the newsletter, get the newsletter. As soon as you get the newsletter, it'll say, enter me in your contest. You get that newsletter once a month. You click on enter me in your contest. You can enter every month. As soon as you enter you in the contest, you're going to win a lifetime membership to the club if you're not already a member. And then one person a month will get a special prize. And the prize that I'm giving away this month is the Organic Municipal Gardeners Growers Kit. The Growers Kit is you get the quart of Super Seaweed, which is $150 value, and you get 5 pounds of my Municipal Gardeners Rock Dust Blend. The rock dust blend is exactly what it says. It's a rock dust and microbial blend. I may have to change the title a little bit. Rock dust and microbial blend. That's over $200 value you're going to get. Plus, I'm also going to throw in the printed version of my Don't Panic, It's Organic book. And so, invisiblegardener.com. Okay, you'll find my blog is up there. I run a club. I'm an organic consultant, amongst other things, but as a member, you can talk to me, and I'll be happy to help you with any problems. I have the organic hotline that you can call Monday through Friday from 5 to 9 p.m. You can try during the day. If I'm here, I'm happy to talk to you. Otherwise, I work too. Same thing with weekends. I'm right here right now, so it's not a good time. If you're going to call me on Saturday, from one to two, might as well call me on my radio show and talk to me. It's real easy to do. Check out the radio show page. You can subscribe to my podcast either by going to my website or by going to vbsradio.com and look for Organic Data Bank and subscribe to my podcast there. You can also get my podcast almost anywhere that podcasts are available. So my podcast is available on iTunes. It's available on a variety of other places. If you use TalkShoe, you can go listen to it there. Get the podcast. If you have any questions, just send it to Andy Lopez at InvisibleGardener.com. Go to my website, sign up for the newsletter, and see if you can, as a member, you get a lifetime membership immediately, which will give you access to over 20 of my books. You'll get them in ebook format. You'll get the Don't Panic, It's Organic in the ebook format immediately, plus then you'll be able to talk to me. If you want the print version of my book, it's $20. If you want it, you know. Otherwise, you might, you know, enter the contest and you might just get it, might win it, and I'll send you a nice kit. So coming up after this is my new show called Cosmic Spaceship, where you get to listen to the latest and greatest music that I've done. Usually, what I've done during the past week, because every week I write something new, and that's coming up called the Cosmic Spaceship. You can subscribe to it again from either bbsradio.com, Cosmic Spaceship, look for the podcast, or go to my website, invisiblegardener.com, look for a radio show, and it will say subscribe to the podcast. I think I call it Inner Gardening. I may have to change it up there, but I think it should say either Cosmic Spaceship or Inner Gardening. So but thank you very much for listening to my show. I should get a... let's see what time is. Oh, I got 4 more minutes. Wow, cool. So I'm going to be doing, in the beginning of every show, I'm going to be doing a little bit of a newscast. And so I'm always looking for information on that I can pass along to people, you know, about what's going on in the environmental world here. I found it interesting, the rise of the virtual restaurant. Food delivery apps are inspiring digital-only establishments that don't need a dining room or waiters. So that's kind of interesting. And another thing I found, somebody just sent me to me, says, problems with gene-edited cows. Proving the point yet again that gene editing is far from perfect, the FDA found antibiotic-resistant non-bovine DNA in gene-edited cattle. Oh, boy. So we got to keep an eye on this the gene editing. I mean, it can be beneficial if done correctly, but if you keep adding chemicals to it, it ain't going to work. If you keep trying to find a way to sell your chemicals, it ain't going to work. So we have, another 2 more minutes. What can I talk about? So next week, coming up, I have a whole bunch of interesting things I'm going to be doing. So I hope you stay tuned. I'm going to be doing more news reporting. I'm trying not to get involved in politics and stuff, but you can't really help it. As I said, you know, it's really important, this the Amazon fire that's going on. You have to keep a close eye on that. But what it means is that we're in trouble if we don't pay attention to what's going on right now. We really seriously are. We're reducing our oxygen level and increasing all the other chemical levels, from methane to carbon dioxide. And that is not a good path to take. And so and one of the sources we need to keep is our trees. That's a very important source of carbon dioxide removal, right? And the other important is the soil. The soil removes 20 to 40% of the carbon dioxide. The same thing with the ocean. 20 to 40% of the carbon dioxide in the air gets removed by the ocean. So that's 80%. That's why the rest of it is the trees. So now we've damaged all three of aspects of that, haven't we? So that's not good. That's going to take a while for it to heal. So I decided I'm just going to start yelling a little louder. Won't run around with a sign, the end is near, the end is near, that kind of stuff. I mean, I'm not sure what we can really do about it, because there are so many hidden problems that have to be solved. We have to stop sticking our hand in the fire, but we need to figure out a way to really not be attracted to the fire so much, huh? So thank you very much for listening to my show. I'll be back again next week. Don't Panic, It's Organic, with your host, Andy Lopez, the Invisible Gardener. Visit my website, invisiblegardener.com. Check out the newsletter. Check out my blog. I write, as you know, music, and I do artwork. And, you know, this, you can leave questions up there. If you have any questions about this show, you can also leave it up there on the comment, because later on I will post the show up, and there's a space you can do comment, and we can talk about it. But if you ever want to talk to me, just call me on my right here, and I'm happy to talk to you live. So I think we're going to be done soon.